It's a pleasure to be here this evening to address you. I was asked to speak on a topic of relevance to the Stern College women community. So I seized upon the subject of women's communal leadership, opportunities, and challenges in the modern age. This is an important topic, one that ties in with Inyana Dioma, because we know that one facet of the celebration of Pesach is that there is an obligation of women to participate in the Dalet Kosos. We say that Apein Hayu Bioso Anes, right? That the women were also involved in the miracle of Mitzrayim, of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And the Rashbam explains that this was a very active role, that the women saw to it that their husbands would continue to have children, that there wouldn't be a yush, that there wouldn't be a sense of despondency and desperation, that the families would continue to build and look forward positively and optimistically towards the future. The Lashon of the Gemara in Sota is Bishkar Nashim Sidkaniyo Shehayu Bioso Adur Nigalu Yisrael Mimitzrayim. Because of the righteous women of that generation, we merited to be redeemed from Egypt. So when one speaks about the notion of women's leadership in general, it's important to have on the one hand the context of the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, where clearly there was a prominent leadership role played by the women of that generation. And we know that in many of the major miracles that we commemorate, whether it's the miracle of Purim, whether it's the miracle of Hanukkah, we talk about the significant role that was played by the women of each generation in terms of bringing about the Yeshua, in terms of bringing about the salvation. So therefore, there is a little bit of a preliminary clarification of the issue that needs to be issued, which is that there always has been a prominent role played by women in Jewish history in terms of providing for the basic leadership of the home, the basic leadership of the generation, the basic leadership of the continuity of the Jewish people. And really what we are focusing upon tonight is, I would say, probably a much more specific application of this discussion, and that is the question of the nature of the specific types of roles which are open or are not open to women within the structure of the Jewish communal framework. And that has a lot to do with the notions of gender roles and the notions of specific halachos that classify sometimes what are the obligations of men and what are the obligations of women in performing their respective roles on behalf of the community. But the question as to whether the Benos Yisrael, whether the Neshe Yisrael play a seminal role in terms of the continuity of the Jewish people, so that's already been answered for us numerous times. That is not a subject that requires any further elaboration or that is subject to any kind of question. So there are really three different issues that I wanted to identify for you. I have handouts where you can see some of the sources. We don't need to go through them all tonight in meticulous detail, but that's for your further reading. Maybe we'll look at some of them. But it's important to identify three distinct issues whenever there is a focus or whenever there is a conversation about this topic, especially when we talk about different opportunities or even potential changes within the Jewish institutional and communal framework in the modern age. And those three issues, just to lay them out for you, are number one, the issue of Sarara, the issue of are there certain types of positions that are off limits to women because they constitute sarara, because they constitute some type of an authoritarian role within the community that might only be something that is applicable to men as opposed to women? What are exactly the parameters and what are the specific applications of this notion of sorora? That's number one. Number two, what are the connotations and implications with respect to these issues when it comes to tznius? We know that all of the Jewish people are required to conform with the directive of Hatznea Leches, Lifnei Elokecha, that we're all supposed to conduct ourselves with modesty in all of our dealings and in all of our activities. But there seems to be, based on many Ma'amari Chazal, based on the principle of Kol Kavuda Bas Melech Penima, a heightened emphasis on the notion of tznius when it comes to Benos Yisrael. That's number two. And number three, if there have been traditional paradigms that have existed within the Jewish community throughout the generations in terms of the roles of men, the roles of women, certain types of positions that heretofore were always occupied by men, certain types of positions that were never occupied by women, what role does Mesorah, what role does the traditions of the generations play in this calculus? To what degree is it of significance that something was lo ra'inu, something was not seen, was not practiced, was not done in the past? Are our various communal practices and role-playing subject to modification over the years, and if so, how? So I'd like to start with the first general category for discussion, and that is sorora. So here, there is a significant comment which is made by the Rambam. The Rambam in Hilchos and Melachim says, based on the pasuk in Devarim, that records Som Tasim Alecha Melech, that the Jewish nation is called upon to appoint a melech, to appoint a king. So the term king, very pointedly, is a masculine form. The Medrash picks this up and notes that it connotes Melech v'lo Malka, that when there is a supreme political leader who is appointed over the Jewish nation, it has to be a Melech, it has to be a king, v'lo Malka, and not a queen. That's the simple understanding of Ruba Deruba of the poskim, of the authorities. And the Rambam takes it a step further. The Rambam says, "Ein ma'amidin isha b'malchus shenemar alecha melech v'lo malka." You cannot appoint a woman to be a royal leader, because the verse in the Torah in Sefer Devarim, in Parsha Shoftim, says, "Melech, you appoint alecha som tasim alecha melech v'lo malka, not a queen." And then the Rambam throws in for good measure the following line, which is what creates the conundrum. V'chein kol mesimos shebi Yisrael, says the Rambam, and so to all positions of authority in the Jewish nation, ein memanim bohem ela ish. You can only appoint as the leader, as the occupant of any leadership position, regardless of what it is, says the Rambam, a man. Can't be a woman. So the Rambam extrapolates, it seems, from this exclusion of a woman from Malchus to an exclusion of a woman from any position of sorora. Nonetheless, what is interesting to note is that not all the Rishonim necessarily bring down this same drasha. If you look in the classical Midrashim, you won't find this drasha. You might find it in the Psikta Zutarsi, in one of what is probably a later compiled medrash, and the authenticity of this particular sentence, of this particular drasha quoted by the Rambam, is very much open to question, so much so that many authorities, including even contemporary authorities, are of the opinion that the Rambam just kind of added this on his own, that the Rambam extrapolated that just like there's an exclusion in the broader pasuk of a ger from a positions of authority, and we know that that exclusion applies to any position of authority that is much more clear in the Gemara, so too the same is applicable to women. But if you look in the Sefer Achinuch, for example, the Sefer Achinuch does not have this exclusion of Sarara with respect to women beyond the notion that a woman can't serve as a queen, as a royal leader. And when it comes to other types of individuals, specifically a ger, a convert, the Sefer Achinuch is very explicit that the convert is in fact excluded from any position of Sarara. So the simple reason reading of the Sefer Achinuch is that the Sefer Achinuch does not apply the same limitation to women that the Rambam does, and that if you understand according to the Sefer Achinuch, there is no halakhically mandated limitation of Sarara with respect to women, other than, of course, occupying the royal throne. This question as to whether the Rambam's definition of the limitation of Sarara to women is halakha lemaise was very much a focus of a couple of tshuvos that were penned by Rav Moshe Feinstein just a few decades ago. And Rav Moshe Feinstein basically had to grapple with the two important applications of this question. One is, do we in fact paskin like the Rambam that Sarara is off limits to women? And number two, if Sarara is off limits to women, what does Sarara mean? So Rav Moshe Feinstein answered the two questions in the following way. Rav Moshe said that given that the question that the Rav Moshe was dealing with was the case of a woman who was who had a husband who was a mashkiach, and they made their parnasa through his hashkacha, through his giving hashkachos on kashrus, and then he passed away, and she wanted to be able to continue to run the hashkacha that her husband had previously overseen, because otherwise she would not have been able to make a parnasa. So Rav Moshe was asked whether a woman could serve as a mashkicha. So Rav Moshe said that with respect to the question as to whether this actually constitutes Sarara, Rav Moshe said he thinks it does. He thinks there's no more exalted position imaginable, right, than being a mashkiach. So Rav Moshe apparently had the opinion that it doesn't necessarily have to do with the cover of the position per se, but it has to do with the authority. So Rav Moshe said that you could be, and he says this elsewhere, you could be a Rosh Yeshiva, he says, and that's not considered to be Sarara. Because when you're a Rosh Yeshiva, so you're basically just supervising the classes, supervising the Talmidim, but you're not telling the Balabatim. You're not telling kind of the owners and supporters of the organization what to do. But if you have a position, and he bases it on a Gemara, if you have a position in which you have the authority to tell the Balabatim what to do, so then that constitutes Sarara. That is the definition of Sarara. Like, for example, the Gemara gives the case of somebody who is Memuna al Amidos, somebody who goes around from store to store, from grocery store to grocery store, and tells the shopkeepers as to whether or not their weights are properly adjusted. And if they're not properly adjusted, then he has the right to tell them that they need to adjust their weights, they need to make their weights more accurate. He's telling the Balabatim, he's telling the grocery owners what to do. So too, a mashkiach tells the owners what to do. You could have somebody who has a store, and they want to serve a certain type of food, and the mashkiach says, no, you're not allowed to serve that food. They want to be able to cook in a certain dish, and the mashkiach says, no, this dish became treif, and therefore you're not allowed to cook in this dish. So the mashkiach has the ability to tell the Balabatim what to do, and therefore, that's considered to be a position of Sarara. Then Rav Moshe turns to the question as to whether a woman could serve in that position. And Rav Moshe says that even though the Rambam says that this notion of Sarara, of the prohibition of a woman serving in a position of Sarara, extends to any kind of position, he notes, as we just did, that the Sefer Achinuch doesn't seem to be in agreement. And he says that there are a number of other Rishonim as well who are not in agreement with the Rambam. And therefore, he writes, Letzorech Gadol, that if you have a strong need, if there is a situation where it makes a lot of sense for a woman to serve in the position of Sarara, in this particular case, it would be the poor widow who would not be able to make a living if she wouldn't carry on the duties of being a mashkicha. So then he says that there is room to be lenient. And then Rav Moshe adds one very important additional nekuda. And the other important additional nekuda that's added by Rav Moshe is that Rav Moshe says that this would be true, that you could rely upon those who disagree with the Rambam if there isn't another way out. But if there is a way out in which somehow you could accommodate the aspirations and the needs of the woman in question and of the community, and at the same time comport with the shita of the Rambam, so then it's preferable to do so. So therefore, in this particular case, Rav Moshe crafted a solution. What was the solution? The solution was that nominally and formally, officially, the woman would have to report to a particular rav. The rav would be the official mashgiach of the agency, and the woman, this widow, would report to the rav. So she would go to work. She would do all of the necessary tasks that are associated with being a mashgicha. But at the end of the day, at least on the books, officially, the way the whole thing would be structured and set up is that she would have to report to a particular rabbinical authority. Now, if she was very good, which presumably she was very knowledgeable, then probably the rub in question would just be a rubber stamp for whatever it is that she would be doing. But nonetheless, as long as you created this official structure where the person who was officially on the top, officially in charge, was the Rav, then, according to, then says Rav Moshe, this is the ideal type of solution, because this way she's able to effectively function as the Mashkicha, but at the same time, she is not officially the one in charge, and therefore it wouldn't even constitute an issue of Sarara according to the Rambam. This is an important paradigm for several reasons. Number one, because of the fact that, yes, go ahead, please ask the question.
Is this the precedent for you at the halakha? In other words, these women are very knowledgeable about the issues regarding nidah, and even though other women are coming to ask questions and they are offering answers, at the end of the day, they're still, if you will, reporting to other rabbinical authorities. So is that really the same thing going on here?
So this is a good question, and this is really one of the points, I think, that actually emerges from Rav Moshe's analysis. Meaning, what Rav Moshe said, really, is that if you do have some sort of an argument, a plausible argument, that there might be a tremendous value of a woman, in this case he talks about Sarach Gadol, of a woman serving in a particular position, then it might be possible to allow for certain types of positions, even though on their face they seem to run against the shita of the Rambam. And the second thing that Rav Moshe said that's interesting and helpful for this discussion is that one can even structure such a position in such a way that doesn't run afoul of the Rambam, if you do it in such a way that the official individual who is in charge or who is supervising the activities is a rav, is a man who might classically or traditionally be in that type of a position of authority. So this relates very much to the whole discussion about women in Talmud Torah and the type of roles that are appropriate for a woman to play in the context of being a rabbinic or serving in a quasi-rabbinic sort of capacity. As we know, this is somewhat a controversial issue because there's the whole question about whether women can be rabbis, right? Well, throughout all of the generations, a woman was never a rabbi. Why is it that a woman was never allowed to be a rabbi? My wife once mentioned to me, I'll get into trouble because this is on tape, that when she was a young girl, so her aspiration in life is that she would become the first female Orthodox rabbi. And then she discovered that this is not something which is mutter. She didn't know. She's going to school. She thought, well, I don't think there's ever been a woman before who became a rabbi. Maybe it's something I should aspire to. Then she realized it was off limits, and she was perfectly happy becoming a teacher of Limudei Kodesh, and she doesn't aspire to become a rabbi. But what is, in fact, the issue of a woman serving in this particular capacity? So there is, first of all, the question that we have discussed up until now of Srora. One could argue that a rabbi is not necessarily occupying a position of Srora. Having served as in a variety of different rabbinic capacities over the years, I could tell you it certainly doesn't feel very powerful to serve in a rabbinic leadership position, at least most of the time. There's the famous Gemara in Horios, where Rabban Gamliel decided that he was going to appoint two young, outstanding Talmidei Chachamim to positions of rabbinic leadership, and because of the fact that they were so modest and humble, they were reticent to come to meet him for his scheduled appointment. So he sent after them, and he said, do you think that I'm giving you srora? I'm giving you slavery. I'm giving you servitude. So that might be an accurate assessment of the rabbinate. That's one question. Does it constitute srora altogether? A second question might be the second category that we mentioned at the beginning of our talk, which is what about tznius? There is a pasuk that is quoted in a halacha lemaisa context by the Gemara in a couple of places, of kol kevuda bas melech penima, that the glory and the honor of a daughter of Israel who is likened to a princess is to remain within, to remain as modest as possible, and the more public the role, the less modest will be the status of this individual. In fact, the Gemara in Yevamos even derives the halacha of amoni velo amonis and moavi velo moavis, that we can accept as gerim and allow to integrate within the community converts from the nations of Ammon and Moab who are females, like Rus HaMoavia, but not converts from the Ammon and Moab nations who are male. Why is that? Because when Bnei Yisrael were passing through on their way from Mitzrayim, these nations did not have the decency to bring out water or food in order to nourish them. And the Gemara says, well, who has the practice to go out into the street to greet wayfarers who are coming through to give them water and food? That would be the men, because we expect the women to be inside. So therefore, this halacha was never applicable to the women. It was only applicable to the men, because it was not, in fact, punishable on the part of the women that they didn't go out in the streets, because women are supposed to maintain a certain sense of tznius and remain indoors. And the Gemara seems to conclude that this really is the source of the halacha as to why it is that Rus HaMoavia was allowed to marry within the nation, and why indeed it is that David HaMelech was considered to be legitimate. And this is what lends legitimacy to the entire Davidic dynasty. So we see that this is a very powerful notion, this idea of kol kavuda bas melech penima, and that also has to be reckoned with. And then finally, there is the notion that when it comes to traditions of certain halakhos that were observed in a particular fashion throughout the years, we have to assume that there is some sort of a reason for it. And as the Netziv writes in his Shailos Tshuvos, that when it comes to making any type of chidushim, that we have to make sure that our intentions are very sincere, that we want to do things differently in a way that is faithful to the Mesorah of the Torah, that we're looking to uphold the Mesorah of the Torah and not Chas V'Shalom to in any way distort it. And secondly, the Chassam Sofer points out in his Shailos Tshuvos that whenever you have sort of an issue, a new issue, somebody wants to do something new in the community, it's sort of a question of serious import that would in some way modify the way that things had always been done, So there is a necessity in our Mesorah, in our tradition, to consult with the Gedolei HaPoskim with respect to whether a suggested change is within the realm of legitimacy or is not within the realm of legitimacy. So this question has come up quite significantly both in the realm of Talmud Torah for women and in the realm of a Torah leadership roles for women as well, as you pointed out. You know, the starting point really is the comment that Rashi has when Moshe Rabbeinu was called upon to appoint Dayanim, and the Torah says, Havu lachem anashim chachamim univonim, you should appoint men who are wise and who are very smart. Biduim l'shiftechem, they're known to your, they're respected by your various tribes. Basimein b'roshechem, and I will place them as your rabbinic leaders. And Rashi comments there in that pasuk in Devarim, Anoshim. What do you mean Anoshim? V'chisale al datcha Anoshim? Do you think that he's going to appoint women? Nah, it must mean not men, but Tamalom Anoshim Tzadikim. It means men who are Tzadikim. We know already, automatically. Of course it has to be Anoshim. Nobody would even fathom the idea that it would be Noshim. So the question is, why not? Which of the considerations that we have enumerated are implicated in this type of analysis, or is there perhaps some other consideration when it comes to rabbinic roles? So I think that when it comes to rabbinic roles, there actually is one other consideration. When it comes to rabbinic roles, the Rambam writes that the whole notion of smicha, of appointing somebody as a musmach, as somebody who is a somebody who has a rabbinic ordination, the Rambam writes, "V'ketzidi asmicha ledoros." Lo she yismichu yidei and arosh hazaken. Says it's not that you just smicha means right when it comes to korbanos. Smicha means that you rest your hands on the korban before you shech the korban. So you put your hands on top on the head of the animal. So it doesn't mean you put your hands on the top of the head of the person who's going to be ordained. That's not what it means. What is the essence of rabbinic ordination, says the Rambam? The essence of rabbinic ordination is Elo Shekorin Lo Rebbe. We say you are called a rabbi, right? Rebbe, rabbi, that's basically what it is. For the Omrim Lo, and we say to the individual, Areyat Samuch, you are ordained. For Yeshach HaRishus Lodun Afilu Dinei Knossos. And therefore you have permission to do what? To serve as a dayan. We see that the institution of rabbinic ordination originally began as an institution to create dayanim, to appoint Jewish law judges. So when it comes to smicha, it's very much, even though obviously our smicha is not exactly the same as the original smicha, but we still say we're shlichusayu, we're agents of the original musmachim, we are considered to be agents in time and place of those who originally received the pristine smicha from Moshe Rabbeinu. So this notion that smicha fundamentally goes hand in hand with dayanus is at the very origin of the institution of ordination. So what then is the halacha with respect to whether women can serve as dayanim? So this is a whole discussion amongst the Rishonim. Tosfos discusses it in a number of different places, but the bottom line, as is codified unambiguously in the Shulchan Aruch, in Siman Zayin of Choshen Mishpat, is that Isha Pesula Ladu, that a woman is not allowed to serve as a dayan. This is probably simply a Gezeres HaKasuv. That the Gezeres HaKasuv says, V'amdu Shnei Anashim Lifnei Hashem, that when it comes to testimony, to rendering testimony as an aid, the Torah says, Anashim, it has to be men. And anybody who can't serve as an aide can't serve as a dayan. If you can't be a witness, then you can't be a judge. So for technical purpose reasons, there's a clear gzeres hakasuv that eliminates women from being dayanim. So I think that often when the question is posed about women serving as a rabbi, rabba, whatever term is utilized for the purpose, essentially it's really what I would call a straw man or a straw woman that it is brought up as a paradigmatic case, but it's really very much an exceptional case, and it very much serves as a distraction from the broader conversation, because in this particular instance, we have a real exclusion based on Xeris Akosov. A woman can't serve as a dayan. A woman is therefore not subject to the entire parsha, to the entire conversation regarding smicha, regarding ordination. That simply is off limits, I believe, for purely technical reasons, even without getting into these other discussions. However, in the course of the conversation that the Rishonim have about the question of women serving as dayanim, so Tosfos asks Akasha. Tosfos asks Akasha from the case of Devorah. Devorah, we know, served as a shofetis. That sounds a little bit like a dayanis, right? Like a dayan. So how could then Devorah have served in that capacity? So Tosfos gives a few different answers in a few different places. One of which is, who says a woman can't be a dayan? As I said, we don't hold that way. Another is that the Devorah was different because she was appointed al pi dibor. She was a neviah. She was a prophetess. She was appointed by a Kodesh Baruch Hu specifically for this purpose. And a third answer that Tosfos gives that is actually quoted lahalacha. It's quoted for halacha lemaisa purposes on the bottom of the page of the Shulchan Aruch. Right? If you make it anywhere in the page of Shulchan Aruch, so therefore that counts for halakhic purposes. So it's on the bottom of the page in what's called the Pisgah Teshuvah, the bottom of the page of the Shulchan Aruch, right? And Tosfos basically answers, the Devorah lo aisa dono. No, she wasn't a rabbi, she wasn't a judge. Ella milamedis lehen dinim. She taught them. She was a tamidat chacham. She was very knowledgeable, she was very wise, she was very learned, and therefore she was able to transmit her learning to others. She was able to serve as a Torah teacher, not only as a Torah teacher, but even it sounds a little bit like she was actually teaching them the halacha. Now, there are two different versions of this Tosfos. One of this answer in Tosfos. One version is she taught them dinim. The other version is Melamedes Lehen. Yeah, she taught them Sheyadunu, that they will be able to know how to properly paskin. What is this extra word Sheyadunu providing within Tosfos? So it could be this extra word is providing essentially the point that was made originally by Rav Moshe, namely that when you have a situation where you have a very learned woman who's really able to contribute to the community, and we want her to contribute her vast erudition and to be able to paskin, to be able to teach halakos so that people will know what to do. Nonetheless, there is a hierarchy. And the hierarchy is that the woman can't be the dayan, she can't be the rav, so you have to have a rav who ultimately is serving in the capacity of supervising the activity of psak that is going on, and that is the word sheyadunu, that she's melamedes lehen, she was teaching them what to do, sheyadunu, so that they would know how to properly paskin. So if you take this, for example, to and apply it to the case that you mentioned of the yoetzet halacha, so then it would play out very nicely. We could say that if you have a rabbinic authority in the community who is essentially serving as the Morah D'Asra, and the woman is serving under him in her capacity as Yoetzet Halacha, so then you've obviated any type of Sarara issue, according to the Rambam, based on the approach of Rav Moshe. You'll say that she might be serving in some sort of a quasi-rabbinic capacity. No. If she is not actually serving with ordination and all she's doing is being a learned person who is teaching halachos to people, so then you don't run afoul of that problem. Now, what about tznius? So again, it's perfectly possible to learn and be learned and to teach others in a fashion which is modest and which is tsanua, particularly if the public face and the public personality is that of a rav who is essentially serving in a supervisor type of capacity. Of course, one has to reckon with the third consideration that I mentioned at the beginning of the shiur, one of Misorah, that if you're going to introduce new types of roles and new types of paradigms, of course that requires consultation with rabbinic authorities. The nice thing, though, is that we see, not only from the case of Dvorah, we see from the psak on the bottom of the page in the Shulchan Aruch by the Piskei Tshuva, where he says that if you have a learned woman, it can be perfectly appropriate for her to teach dinim to other people. I'll give you even the exact quote, so you'll see what the Piskei Tshuva says. He says that v'kasa b'seife birke Yosef, after isha psula ladun, even though a woman cannot serve as a judge, mikol makom isha chachama, a woman who is wise, yichola v'horos hara, she is able to actually teach halacha if she is qualified for that purpose. So you'll ask the question, there's still one hurdle that you'd have to overcome with respect to the yoetzet halacha, a type of position, and that is, doesn't the Mishnah in Sota indicate that you're not supposed to teach women Torah altogether, right? The Mishnah says, Amu chachamim kol ha-malamed espito Torah. Anybody familiar with this? Kol ha-malamed espito Torah ki'ilu melamda tiflus. If you've taught your daughter Torah, it's as if you have taught her tiflus. So I don't know an exact, perfect definition of tiflus, but let's stipulate that it's not a good thing. Okay, so if you teach your daughter Torah, you've taught her something which is destructive. You've taught tiflus. The Ramah says devar avera, something sinful. So therefore, how can the practice be justified altogether? So the answer is, this is the Shulchan Aruch quoting from the Maseches Sota. So the answer is that the Shulchan Aruch itself makes the comment that why is it that Tzivu Chazal Shelo Yilamed Odom Espito Torah Mipnei Sherov Anashim Ein Daitam Mikuvanos Lislamed. So the Shulchan Aruch itself created a wiggle room there. Said Rov Anashim, most women. It was some sort of a psychological assumption that pertained maybe as a general rule, but did not necessarily apply to everybody. And not only that, but then the Shulchan Aruch says, and this only applies to Torah Shebaal Peh. It doesn't apply to Torah Shebichtav. And then the Ramah says a woman is obligated to learn those halakas that apply to her. So what we found, even if we're looking at the strict Misorah, is that there were a lot of caveats built in. Yeah, Torah Shebichtav is okay. If it's laws that she needs to know, it's okay. We're worried about Rov Nashim and not necessarily all Nashim. And based on all of these kind of psachim, all of these openings that were provided even by Chazal, so that gave the opportunity for later authorities to find an opening that they could develop in order to be able to meet the needs of the women in their generation and even the communities in their generation. The Prisha on that Gemara, on that Shulchan, on that comment, on that Halacha says, Avalim Lamda Liatzma, if she learns on her own, so we see that she's not included in this Rov Nashim description, and therefore that is perfectly fine. So you can say that the case of Dvorah, the case of the Isha Chachama described in the Piskei Tshuva, these are women who are self-starters and self-motivated, and it was perfectly permissible. There was no adherent prohibition for them to learn Torah. There was just a concern about a father force-feeding his daughter's Torah when they might not necessarily be receptive towards it. But if you have a woman who is receptive, so then that's a wonderful thing, and she could even be somebody who teaches halakha properly. And then the Chafetz Chaim took it to the next step, and if you're talking about consulting with the Gedolei Ador, so you have to determine who qualifies as a Gadol Ador. Leis Man Depalin, if the Chafetz Chaim qualified as a Gadol Ador, he was the Chafetz Chaim, right? So the Chafetz Chaim had the broad shoulders to be able to say, and I quote from him, so you'll see that it's possible for somebody to say such a thing. The only question is who and when and how. But the Chofetz Chaim says, "Venira, the Chol Zeh, all of this." This is on his commentary on the Gemara in Sota. Says Chol Zeh Dafka Bizmanim Shelefaneinu. This is all just applying to the days that came before us. Shekol Echad Ayadav and Makam Avosav. Everybody lived with their families in an atmosphere of Torah. VeKabbalah Sa'avos Ayachazak Meod. Eitzu Kol Echad VeEchad Lisnaig VeDerek Shedarchu Avosav. Everybody picked up the proper nihugim by being in the home, and they were able to therefore know how to live a proper Torah lives. So Hainu Yecholim Lomar Shlo Tumah Torah. So then we could say a woman doesn't have to learn Torah, but Tismo Ken Hagal Avosay Yisharim, because she'll be able to pick it all up in the home. About Ka'es, but he's talking about even in his day in the Chofetz Chaim in Europe. He says, "But I want to say to our rabbis, Shekabbalas Ha'avos Nisrofet Mode, the traditions of the homes." He said it wasn't as perfect as it's always portrayed in the European age. There was a lot of assimilation, and there was a lot of a spread of non-observance. The guy Matzli Shein Adab and Malcolm Avos of Klal, the person might not even be together with in their ancestral town. Ubeprat Osin Shemagilin Asma Lilmod Ksav Loshan Amim, and especially that you have women who are not just homebodies anymore, but are going out and they're learning other chokmos, they're learning other types of secular studies. So imagine if you had a Stern college where you only had secular studies and you didn't have Torah. Wouldn't make any sense. Once you're learning the secular studies, then of course you should give Torah at least the equal way. You should give it greater way. Bevadai mitzvah rabba lelamdam chumash v'gam neviim uksuvim musari chazal. So he says, certainly it's a mitzvah to teach them lots of Torah. Now the Chofetz Chaim stops short of authorizing the actual teaching of Torah Shebaal Peh. But you could make the argument that if the women need to know the halachos, if women today obviously need to know halachos that are applicable to them, and you could say halacha is not only halacha, but it's also a hashkafas hachayim. And that hashkafas hachayim and that perspective of halacha is only going to be attained through an immersion in Torah Shebaal Peh, so one can extend the various caveats that are built into the halacha and the special dispensation that was given, for example, by the Chofetz Chaim, to potentially take it a step further and say that certainly in our times, when there is such a widespread of accessibility of knowledge to men and women alike, that there's been a revolution of knowledge, of schooling, of training, of worldliness that everyone is exposed to, that it makes all the more sense that in this age, of course, it is appropriate and proper and maybe even obligatory to expose the women who are going through the educational system to the same benefits, not only in Torah Shebiktav, but also Torah Shebaal Peh, that are available to the young men who are going through our educational system. So lest this sound heretical to you, probably doesn't sound heretical to you, but lest it sound heretical to anybody, I will read the words of none other than Rav Soloveitchik, who articulated this idea very powerfully in a letter that he wrote actually close to 60 years ago. This was a letter that was written to somebody who was involved in the educational world, Rabbi Leonard Rosenfeld, who asked him about a curriculum, a proper curriculum in a co-educational school. And this is what the Rav said. He said, "Dear Rabbi Rosenfeld," this is printed in the book Community Covenant and Commitment, Selected Letters and Communication of the Rav. "As to your question with regard to a curriculum in a co-educational school, I expressed my opinion to you long ago that it would be a very regrettable oversight on our part if we were to arrange separate Hebrew courses for girls. Not only is the teaching of Torah Shebaal Peh to girls permissible, but it is nowadays an absolute imperative." Then the Rav goes on to say, as if this wasn't enough, "This policy of discrimination between the sexes as the subject matter and method of instruction, which is still advocated by certain groups within our Orthodox community, has contributed greatly to the deterioration and downfall of traditional Judaism. Boys and girls alike should be introduced into the inner halls of Torah Shebaal Peh." Very powerful statement. If I would say it, I'd probably be driven out of town. But remember, I'm just quoting the Rav. That's what the Rav says. So this notion that was introduced by the Rav is just taking this deliberation regarding the appropriate expansion of women's Torah learning to the next logical step. Once we've taken it to the next logical step, we have to turn back to kind of the meta-halachic consideration that is really raised by Rav Moshe in his tshuva. Which is Rav Moshe, after he wrote his tshuva, his response, which seems probably to most of us to be relatively mild. Meaning what at the end of the day did he do? He allowed a woman to serve as a mashkicha, right? I mean, most of us would say big deal. Who says that srora anyway? Rav Moshe's biggest chiddush was to say being a mashkicha is a srora. I don't think that the Rav of Soloveitchik necessarily thought that being a mashkiach was a srara. Then Rav Moshe said, okay, she could be a mashkicha under the authority of a Rav so that we won't run afoul of the shita of the Rambam regarding srara. But then Rav Moshe was mercilessly attacked by the editor of a Torah journal who said, look what you're doing. You're allowing a woman to serve in a position that you consider anyway to be srara. And, or at least entertaining the possibility that she could, if you wouldn't have been able to work out this brilliant idea of having a Rav supervisor. Now people will read the Yotshuva, and they'll appoint a woman to become the president of Israel, a prime minister of Israel, and then they'll end up becoming presidents of synagogues, and who knows what horrible havoc will now be wrought because of Yotshuva. So Rav Moshe responded to him, and he said, it sounds to me, a little bit based on your tone, that you are assuming that if you had the following case, if you had two candidates to serve as a presidential position, for example, of a synagogue, and one of them was a man who was a Rasha Merusha, who committed all kinds of averos, who was Mechalos Shabbos, who ate trefus and so forth, and the other was a woman who was a Yira Shemayim, who is somebody who is truly God-fearing and meticulous in every single way and of observance of mitzvot and even an isha tzenua, that you would still consider it to be preferable for the man to serve in that position. That's what it sounded like from this angry response that Rav Moshe got to his previous tshuva. And Rav Moshe says that you could not be more mistaken. Obviously, it's preferable to appoint the isha who's kshera rather than the man who is a Rasha Merusha, who's a kofer and a Rasha. So what is Rav Moshe saying in this statement? And this is a very important statement. He's not saying this, but I would like to elaborate myself upon the import of what Rav Moshe is saying. And that is that in any given situation, in any given communal type of role, in any given communal type of authority, one has to look at what is the way in which we're going to promote the highest observance of Torah. How are we going to promote the observance of Torah and the continuity of the Torah community? And there will be situations in which perhaps in the past there wasn't a position that was carved out, but where given contemporary sensitivities and realities, it makes sense, obviously, within the contours of the halacha and taking into account the sensitivities of the different issues that we have identified, but there will be situations where, of course, it's going to not only be appropriate to carve out these types of roles for women in our community, and including many of you who are in this room right now, but where it's actually going to be necessary and important for us to do so in order to maintain a strong and vibrant and passionate Torah commitment among members of the community. I can envision certain places where a woman might not be comfortable, for example, going to the Rav of the community to present certain types of very sensitive, personal shilos of a physical nature relating to Taras HaMishpacha. And if you had a woman who served in a liaison capacity, who was sensitive and, of course, tsenua, and knowledgeable, and of course respectful of the Rav's authority, that the women in the community would be able to go to in order to present these types of questions and to be able to have these types of sometimes sensitive discussions of both a halakhic and of a hashkafic nature, then this, if anything, could reinforce and elevate Torah observance within the community, keep families within the community, and enable for greater continuity and growth within our Torah Jewish community. So therefore, I believe that when it comes to thinking through any of these questions, we have to think them through in terms of, number one, what are the roles that are completely off limits, and where are there gray areas? And number two, when there are gray areas and when there are questions such as, does something constitute Svara? Is there wiggle room to say that maybe in a particular case we should appoint a woman to a certain type of position, obviously not serving as rabbi, we explain that's off limits, but other types of communal roles, that we have to take into account what are sort of the motivations and the purposes of creating and filling such a position. And if the motivation and the purpose is to further the observance of Torah, to heighten Yiras Shamayim, to heighten the level of observance, so then that's something that has to be carefully considered, and it would be reckless and irresponsible for us not to do so. It's kind of like what the Torah Tamima writes in Parshas Ekev, in the context of talking about the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, v'limatzem osam es b'neichem, where he has a bit of a discussion about the rise of Torah learning amongst women. And the Torah Tamima kind of echoes the words of the Prisha, that if you have a self-motivated woman, so of course it's permissible for her to learn Torah. But he goes even beyond those words. He quotes a Sefer Mayan Ganim. Let me see if I could just find it. And he uses the following very powerful Lashon that runs as follows. One moment. He says that with respect, Avnam Anoshim, Asher Nadav, Liban, Osana, the Kirba, the Karva, El Amalacha, Malachas Hashem, those women who have been so motivated in order to bring themselves closer to the Malacha of learning Torah, of becoming more learned and more observant through their knowledge and self-motivation, Mitzah Bechirasan, Betov, Bemashu Tov, all for good motivations, and Heina Talena Be'ar Hashem, that they shall be tishkarnim b'makom kacho, they will dwell in the holy place, k'neshem mofes heina, because they are wondrous women. They are chakmei doron, and there's a responsibility that devolves upon the chachamim of their generation. La'adron, la'hadron, la'sadron, la'chazik yedeyen, la'ameitz ro'oseyen v'chule, that they should praise them, they should glorify them, and they should assist them and guide them in order to be able to strengthen themselves and make as positive a contribution as they possibly can, to give a loose translation of his words, not so loose. I believe that this is an extremely important message for all of us, one that I try to bear solemnly in mind, especially as the world around us is constantly shifting and moving and changing in ways that may have been unfathomable 100 years ago, where certainly the role of women in general in the world, in the public sphere, is much more prominent than it ever has been before. And while we can't necessarily, and we shouldn't, take our cues from the conduct and the comportment and the ethics and the mores of the modern world, certainly when it comes to issues of sneers, it's often antithetical to our own world. But when it comes to the needs and the strivings and the yearnings of people within our community, when it comes to reckoning with the abundant educational opportunities that are available to men and women alike. So it behooves us to take all of this into consideration in terms of thinking carefully about ways in which we accommodate the growing sophistication of our broader community, and in which we also pave for ways in which there will be greater opportunities to empower and to validate these strivings and these yearnings under the banner of the Torah, and giving respect to all those who truly have sincere motivations to perform certain types of roles, or to find certain types of roles that will enable them to make a serious contribution towards the continuity of the Torah observance and Torah commitment within our communities. And that applies not only to men, but it applies very much to women, and very much to finding the right types of opportunities right here at Stern College. I know we have a GPATS program for those who want to be able to continue to learn Gemara on a higher level. I think this is a really important thing. I think that it is our obligation, and as we just quoted, an obligation, achachme doron, on the rabbis of each generation to take all of these striving seriously, and not only to accommodate, but also to encourage and to promote all of the exemplary women, the nashim sikonios of our generation, who really seek to be able to forward their and to advance their avodas Hashem in as meaningful a fashion as possible. I guess that my purpose in this brief presentation is just to identify the validity of these strivings on the one hand, and to identify also the various issues that are implicated that need to be carefully considered as we take every single step forward in exploring all of the possible avenues of growth. And just as the Nashim Sikonios at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim were responsible, according to the Medrash, that for Nigal Yisrael Mitzrayim, for our Geula from Mitzrayim that we will celebrate at the Pesach Seder in a few days, so too the strivings of all of the sincere and motivated and committed women within our Torah community, Yim Yetzah Hashem, should bring about the Geula Shleima B'mheira B'yameinu. Amen.